Hey, this is Jen Johans at FilmIntuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. This week, I'm delighted to introduce to you Erica Ruth Neubauer. Erica is the Agatha Award-winning author of the Jane Wunderly Mysteries. She spent 11 years in the military, nearly two as a Maryland police officer and one as a high school English teacher, before finding her way as a writer. She has been a reviewer of mysteries and crime fiction for publications such as Publishers Weekly and Mystery Scene Magazine for several years, and she is a member of Sisters in Crime and Mystery Writers of America.
Well, Erica, I am so glad to talk to you again. I loved meeting you. It was like a month ago, I think, now at Poison Pen. But I loved listening to the stories of your travels and your books. So this is really cool. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. So excited.
Yes. Well, anytime. We have similar taste in movies, and I think we're around the same age, so we probably have a lot of similar references. And I love this idea of ensemble mysteries because that's kind of what you do as well. Would you like to tell us about the Jane Wunderly books for anyone who doesn't know what you write?
Absolutely. So it's a historical mystery series. They're set in the 1920s. The first one is set in Egypt at the Mina House Hotel, thusly called Murder at the Mina House.
Okay.
She's an American war widow. She's traveling with her very saucy aunt. She gets accused of murder and then has to clear her name, as one does.
And then
each book in the series after that is set in a different location, both because I love to travel and apparently because I love to make things really difficult for myself.
Yeah, researching in the 20s in different parts of the world. Yeah.
Yeah, so each book is like a whole new challenge, and having to learn like what was this place like in the 20s, which is fun, but also like I said, it does make a lot of work for me. But I wouldn't change it. We were talking before we started rolling that I just got back from Italy because book 7 is set in Venice, and so I had to go take a look at the city of Venice and see what's there and do my checklist and check all the things that are, you know, in the new book.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great. And I know you have a background. You were in the military. First of all, thank you for your service, of course. So you traveled the world. And did you always want to travel, like from childhood on?
Was this? Yes. I have always wanted to travel. And it's actually funny. I joined the military to pay for school. I also joined because I wanted to travel. And the funny thing is I did not get to travel with the military.
Oh, no.
No, I know. I really was like stationed in California for a little while. I was stationed in Texas for a little while. No offense to people in Texas, but I got a beef with Texas. it's the heat and the insects and the, anyway.
Yeah.
And then I was stationed.
Was it the Army?
It was Air Force.
The Air Force. Oh, very cool. One of my uncles was in the Air Force. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I was like 4 years active duty, and then I was altogether I was 11 years, and then so four
wow.
years active, and then I did a bunch in the reserves and then a bunch in the guard before getting out.
Yeah. And I know you were a police officer, a school teacher. Had writing been something that always interested you, like from childhood on?
Yeah, I've always wanted to be a writer. And like, I think even in my 20s, I would sometimes have a notebook and I would like write down like, oh, I could have a character like this. And like, this could be about this, but I never went any further than that. And I'm not really sure why. I think it might've been just fear. Like I've never taken a creative writing class. So it took me a long time to get the nerve to really try and to have an idea that was, I think worthy of actually sitting down and writing it. But I remember where I was when I was, it's like, I think 2017, I was on my back porch with my best friend, who's a librarian, and we were both reading books. This is what we used to do. It was a summer day, and we had, you know, had iced teas, and I was reading something, and she was reading something, and I kept putting it down, and it was Ashley Weaver's Murder at the Brightwell, and I kept
Ooh.
putting it down and saying, "Oh, I want to write something like this," but set in the 20s in Egypt.
Yeah.
And so then we started like going back and forth and talking about like what the characters might be like and what the plot might be like. And we were so animated and having such a good time and laughing so hard that my neighbor next door slammed their windows.
The damn book already. Don't spoil it. No.
Right? About it. So yeah,
That's so funny.
I sat down and wrote it.
Yeah. Is it one of those things? I know some of my writer friends like, oh, I was working a full-time job, so I got up at 4:30 in the morning and wrote for a few hours. Did you have to do that, or was it during the summer when you had time off from teaching?
I only taught for 1 year. I
Okay.
could barely remember all of the weird jobs that I've had. I think honestly that I at the time was working at the Pottery Barn.
Okay.
At
Hey, I worked at a Hallmark in the mall, like in the late 90s, so you never know.
I mean, we had bought a new house and I was like, you get a real good furniture
Oh,
discount.
yeah. That was
So
smart, actually. Yeah.
I was honestly there for, it's like 40%. I was there for the furniture. Anyway,
Yes.
I was working at the Pottery Barn, and so I had a lot of free time in the mornings to write. And so I think I wrote the first draft in like 6 weeks.
That's amazing.
I mean, I had to go back and do so
Oh,
much
yeah, but still.
whatever, but yeah, by the time I actually sat down, it came out pretty quickly.
That's great. So you're a pretty strict plotter, then, not a pantser.
Oh, I'm absolutely a pantser. I
Oh,
have
wow.
no idea what happens from day to day. Which is crazy that it comes out that fast. But yeah, I didn't know who did it in that first book, until like I was almost done writing it. And I was like, oh, did this person do it? And I was
Oh,
like,
wow.
he did. And I went back and looked and like all the clues were there and that was fine.
So
That
it's
was
your subconscious. So, did you have a really good handle on who the characters were, or were you just kind of creating that as
I
you
was
went?
creating that as I went, and then I
Okay.
definitely, when I would go in and do, and that's how I still work. When I go in and do revisions, I definitely add in, by the end, I usually have figured out who everybody is, and I can go back in and add layers to everybody in revision.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm always jealous of, I think I'm kind of in the middle of plotting and pantsing when I've written fiction or screenplays. But yeah, like Paige Shelton, who writes all kinds of things, cozies and Alaskan mysteries, she just needs a spark, basically. Like she had to write another Alaska book and needed something, or I can't remember which book, and someone just said Bigfoot, and that was her like spark. And Stephanie Roble, when she wrote Hitchcock Hotel, she was talking about how she just in her mind thought seven deadly sins for these characters and like just assigned one, but had no idea. She was writing like this person's sloth and this person's envy, and that kind of helped. But yeah, I'm so impressed by you guys that can just kind of go with it. That's awesome, Erica.
I mean, I'm not sure it's the most effective way to work, but like,
But still,
how I do it.
yeah. So you just released your, was it the sixth title?
So number six just came out. Book seven comes out next March. And I just, it was officially announced, I sold a book to Thomas and Mercer.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
Thanks. So that will come out next February.
Okay.
And it is called Two Bodies Are Better Than One.
Okay. So is that a standalone?
It's I don't know, it's so far it's just one book with them. We'll see if they want more in a series, which I'd be happy to
Oh,
write.
okay. So you'd be doing maybe two series.
Yeah. So I'll be writing
That's
2 books a year.
wild. So does it take you about 6 months a book?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's in and of itself impressive. I don't know how people create like year after year after year. I know again, like my friend Sean Cosby can do it, and he's one of those annoying people. I'm one of the people like I don't love writing, I love having written, and I hear that a lot, like because writing and rewriting is always fun, or getting in there and getting going, but it's that first draft. But he's one of those people who in our group chat will just like drop a block of text and it's something and you're like, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, this is about three books out." What? Like, what are you doing? Like,
Talking about?
yeah. I don't understand. Yes. But so you're going to be on this yearly schedule. That's amazing. And to do, you said you wrote the first Mina House in like 2017-ish. So that's a lot of books in that short period of time. That's so cool.
It is. And I have a couple in the drawer too. So, I mean, I have been pretty much writing 2 books a year up till now anyway. So,
Oh, wow.
yeah.
Oh, so you've got a drawer. Very good.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So, in Ocean's 11, if you guys are a fan, an Ocean's 11 style heist to get those books out of the drawer at Erica's, she's just, yes. That's another book. No.
You love a heist.
Yes. And I did watch an interview with you where you were talking about growing up on like Masterpiece Mystery and black and white movies and your dad. So I know we're going to be talking about ensemble mysteries today, but I'd love to hear more about that because I was one of those geeks who watched like way too many movies very young as well. Yeah.
And like even like my best friend, the librarian, she and I also like in high school would hole up in her basement and watch old black and white movies. Like it didn't
Yeah.
just me and my dad, although there was a lot me and my dad watching old black and white movies. But it kind of transcended that as well. And I still like my friend gave me her login so I could use TCM because I don't have cable. It was like the greatest gift is that I can
Yes.
TCM. I'm
I
so happy.
know. TCM is the greatest. My gosh.
Right?
I still love that intro, that sunny side of the street, with the Chet Baker. Like, I'll go watch that on YouTube sometimes if you need like an endorphin hit, essentially. It's so good. Yeah. It's just calming and even if the movies aren't calming, yeah, just
Very soothing.
exactly. Good nostalgia. So I love that your best friend is a librarian and you would watch all these things with her and read books. I know you are a big reader, and on your website, you actually do have recommendations of books you're enjoying or books that you love, which is very cool. Yeah.
To update that.
Have you read anything recently that you want to give a shout out to?
I think I could finally say I was one of the judges for the Edgars this year.
Oh, congrats. That's so cool.
And so I'm taking a little break from fiction.
Yeah, you would have had to read so much.
But I really actually ended up reading quite a few things last year that I've really loved. And especially some things that I wouldn't have picked up.
Yeah.
Robert Jackson Barrett has like this sci-fi-ish, it was called The Tainted Cup, and it was not
Okay.
I would have picked up and read, but I ended up loving it.
Wow. Yeah, that's not really my genre, but every once in a while you'll find one and it just blows you away. Yeah.
I was like, and I ordered the second one.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, talking about ensemble mysteries and crackling dialogue, really, you can't do better than The Thin Man. I love the book, but the book is very different than the movie. Both came out in 34. And the director of The Thin Man even was kind of like, let's just be spontaneous. It's kind of the book, but it's not. So I know you're a fan of like screwball, feisty heroines. So I'd love to hear more about your relationship with The Thin Man.
Oh, it's one of my favorites. I watch it every year around Christmas because in my book it's a Christmas.
Perfect. Yeah.
It was really the inspiration for me for the dialogue in my books between Jane and Redvers because I love the crackling wit between those two. I think that their on-screen chemistry was so good.
It really was. Yeah, this was the second movie they made. They made Manhattan Melodrama, which of course is notorious as the movie John Dillinger was going to see when he got shot because he loved Myrna Loy. And she always, of course, felt bad about that. And they made 14 total. They're so good together.
So good together. I will admit that the Thin Man series, I think I only really love the first two.
I agree. It kind of, yeah, it sort of went down in quality. There were a couple that were interesting for like the supporting players, But yeah, I agree with you. And I know they put on like those marathons around Christmas and New Year's because yeah, it's perfect for the holidays. Yes. It's another one like The Big Sleep, especially the movie and the book where like gun to your head, I don't know that I could explain this mystery or like I get it, but I don't get it. Like I watched the film and I'm like, am I dumb or did I just forget exactly what happened? And it turns out, I guess everybody feels that way. So that made me feel better.
So interesting about Chandler is like his plots don't really make sense, but they're still good.
Yeah. And, you know, Hammett usually wasn't this convoluted, at least some of the ones I've read, but wow. Yeah, this, the movie at least gets very, very complicated. I read the book a couple years back because I did a podcast as a guest for Skylight Books out in LA, and that was a lot of fun. But yeah, I was cramming, so I did it really quickly. So I don't know that I retained much. I've read the book before, but yeah, it's another one of those that's very dense and it's different. I remember there were so many things in the book where like it takes place, they go back and forth to like hotel rooms a lot. And you know, they had to kind of condense that. They shot it very, very quickly, the film. You know, it was kind of shot out as a B movie, and here it's like one of the most endearing classics. So you never know. Yeah.
I did not know that. I didn't know it was shot as a B movie.
Kind of, it was shot on the cheap, pretty much, really quickly.
So funny because I love that movie.
I do too. Yeah, W.S. Van Dyke was kind of notorious for doing this thing where he's like, yeah, we got to check the lighting. So, William, if you just go in and, you know, do something with the martini shaker just so we can test it. And he did. And then all of a sudden, here's like, that's it, print it. Like, so he wanted them to be really casual and not really know sometimes when he was shooting just to keep it loose. Like the scene where he's shooting the air gun at the Christmas tree. That was just something Powell was doing one day and ends up in the movie. Yeah.
Oh, I love knowing this. I'm
Yeah.
so excited. I love knowing this.
Yeah, I know. And the two of them together were just so good. He appreciated that, you know, she wasn't a diva. Myrna Loy was really inspiring. There was a great, oh, it was on TCM. I'm sure you probably saw it, like a documentary about her and civil rights and some of her activism over the years. And yeah, it was really cool to see that. But I love this side of her. I know Cary Grant, he was very diplomatic for the longest time when people asked, you know, who's your favorite leading lady? Then he kind of went like Irene Dunne. And then immediately after, he's like, and Myrna Loy. So he said Myrna was, I think, compared her to like a tennis player as being like always ready to hit back. And boy, she does that so well with Powell.
Again, like that sparkling dialogue, it's their back and forth is so good.
I know. Yeah. I know that it got really hard for some of the actors because they had to say so much, so many lines of dialogue very quickly, like that dinner table scene. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. But they just did it. And yeah. And you can kind of tell sometimes when they might be doing a little improv. Like there's this adorable scene where I think she has a tray full of martinis and he just like kisses her as they're walking into a room and she kind of smiles and like laughs because I don't think she was expecting that. And so it's really great. You can kind of see why so many hotels and places just assume that they were really married and they were not. Yeah.
Super fair.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, by the way, so I know this was a big influence on your dialogue and your main character's name is Jane. And I did see that you are a big Pride and Prejudice fan. So was that like an homage a little bit to Jane Austen?
Jane is a little bit of an homage to Jane Austen, and the Wanderley I actually stole from The Maltese Falcon.
Oh, wow. I love knowing that. That's so cool.
One of the last movies that my dad and I saw in a theater was The Maltese Falcon before he died, was The Maltese Falcon. And yeah, Bridget O'Shaughnessy, one of the names that she takes is, or one of her aliases is, Wanderley.
That is so good. Oh, that's sweet. There's nothing like seeing these on the big screen. I've never seen The Thin Man on the big screen. I saw My Man Godfrey last summer in LA because it just was playing when I was there. That was really cool. But yeah, I kind of wish more theaters did this.
I do too. I would have loved to see that. I really enjoy William Powell, like, as a whole.
Roger Ebert wrote this really beautiful piece about it for his Great Movies collection in 2002, and he was talking about how William Powell is to dialogue as Fred Astaire is to dance, which I thought was really beautiful. And he was talking about the difference between them and how protective he is. I didn't realize William Powell was 6 feet tall.
What?
And I know, right? And Myrna Loy was like 5'6". And so Ebert pointed that out, and he said he's always protectively over her. And he said otherwise, maybe it's like, or he leans into her as if blown into her direction. And I thought that was really gorgeous.
That is beautiful.
This chemistry.
Tall.
I had no idea. I know, because so many of the actors are short, and especially the leading ladies like Claudette Colbert, that whole era. Things you learn when you do see you go down rabbit holes. Like, I'm sure you went down rabbit holes when you're researching all of these amazing places.
Really do.
I know. That was always my biggest problem, as a film critic for the last 20 years. And so I think that's why it kind of wore me out, is I would see something and go down like 70 different rabbit holes because you want to know more. And that's something that's so good about TCM, is all of a sudden you're like, hey, who is this guy? And what else have they been in? Do you have any other favorites with Powell and Loy from this era, or other favorite screwball films that you think were really big influence?
I have a lot of favorite screwballs.
I do too.
God, Cary Grant. I really love Baby. Was so good. He was really good at screwball. My girl, His Girl Friday.
Talk about, the pace of that. Actually, the movie we're going to talk about later, Clue. I was watching this documentary that John Charles from Poison Pen hit me to, where it said that the film that they showed the entire cast was His Girl Friday. And Jonathan Lynn said, this is the pace we're going to be working at for the dialogue. And everyone got really enthusiastic, maybe a little intimidated, but very excited.
That's awesome.
So these movies really do kind of go together. So that was really smart. But I do love to, of course, the dog Asta, played by Skippy, was also in The Awful Truth, which is another one of my favorite
Yeah.
screwballs.
I didn't realize that Astro was in both of those.
I love Skippy the dog. I
Maybe.
know. So I think it'd be really hard when you write an ensemble mystery not to like tip your hat to who the bad guy is. And actually, Death does a brilliant job of making sure there's no shortage of suspects. And the same with Thin Man. These people are all a little bit shady. So how much fun is that for you to write when you have these larger than life people?
It is the most fun. I love, it's one of the things that I really enjoy about like the Agatha Christies and like Golden Age is that it seems like there, I mean, it's an ensemble. There's a lot of, it's always like a bunch of people who are sort of trapped in a space, and all of them have secrets. And that's what I really love is exploring like what everybody's secret is and why that gives them a motive.
And what was so cool about Mina House, the setup is you have them in kind of a confined or a small area, just like we're going to see with Death on the Nile and Clue in a small space. This is, there's different settings, but it is also kind of, it takes place in a short time span. Which helps, I think.
I'm thinking about it, and I think I've done it with, like, I did it with my second book, my third book, the fourth one, no. The fifth one is on a small island. Like, I really, it's
It's,
really like that, like, here to put people in.
a pressure cooker. It's claustrophobic. I think Agatha Christie was a master at that. I love Agatha. I've been wanting to like do a deep dive and start reading some of those again because I read them growing up and loved them.
Same. I did try to go back and read Death on the Nile. And I read a lot of those when I was like a lot of those when I was a kid, probably like sixth grade. And I forgot how long her front porches are. Like she has so much like backstory and all this stuff leading. I was like, oh wow. I
Doesn't
very
just dive in. Yeah.
no diving in. Which is not how it's done now.
No, not at all. I think it's almost like film has influenced fiction, or our short attention spans, maybe from social media and everything. Like, we need to, get in there really quickly. And it does keep people turning pages. But yeah, she really did have a lot of exposition. I love that you said sixth grade because in sixth grade, I remember we did like a musical theater play and I was in it and it was called Little Miss Christie and it was basically about Agatha Christie and it was like a 10 Little Indians thing. And so that just sent me down the like I knew my mom had the books. She was a library assistant when I was a kid. And so I started reading all of those around middle school.
It's a good time for it.
Yeah.
If you go back and read them now, I'll be really curious to hear what you have to say. Let me know.
Yeah. So you were a big reader as a kid. Did you have any favorites? Did you like mysteries or read everything?
I have always, well, I mean, I read maybe the Babysitter's Club. I mean, it was the
The
80s.
best. Christie's Big Idea, right? Yeah. Yes.
I have always been a huge mystery reader. So, like, I have a Nancy Drew tattoo because I remember the first book that my mom put into my hands was a Nancy Drew book.
I have a Nancy Drew figurine and Nancy Drew socks. So, like, you're my new best friend. No, yeah, this is
Yeah.
awesome. And I should say that we kind of bonded. Boyd Morrison, Boyd and Beth Morrison were there that day. Boyd, I think it was Boyd, asked about your tattoo, which was very cool. And you're like, yeah, it's Clue, my favorite board game and one of my favorite movies. Yeah, the best.
It's an aggressively large tattoo about Clue. And I think it's so funny. I get compliments on it, but like nobody picks up on what it is. Nobody.
It takes a minute.
These are the weapons.
Yeah, you have to explain it. Yeah. It's kind of the thing where you probably get asked so much that you want to wear a t-shirt. Like, yes, this is Clue.
Arrow, this.
Yeah. Oh. So, do you have any other thoughts on The Thin Man?
I mean, I love that movie.
Yeah. Highly recommend if anyone is listening, hasn't seen it for sure. Yeah.
I don't have any other.
Well, it's a good segue. We were talking about Agatha Christie anyway, to jump into. Look at that. We're planning, we're pantsing it and we're doing fine.
Now I.
Yeah, we're moving on to Death on the Nile, which is kind of a sequel to Murder on the Orient Express, and it's very similar sort of in its setup. Albert Finney didn't want to play the part again. He didn't want to wear the makeup again in the hot sun. I can see that. So they decided to go in a completely different, according to the filmmaker, direction. And Peter Ustinov, legendary actor as well, amazing as Poirot. I know I'd seen this in Evil Under the Sun and maybe some of the TV movies that he did, but for me, I mean, when I think of Poirot, I always think of Suchet. So it was good to kind of go back and watch this. I mean, can you imagine being like a fly on the wall on that set? First of all, you got like Bette Davis,
Oh my God.
David Niven, Mia Farrow. You have so many like big personalities, Jane Birkin. I can't imagine what that was like. Yeah. Good and bad. I mean, amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, I again watching the cast, like I watched it yesterday again, and I was like, wow, this is really an incredible, like George Kennedy.
Yes.
I was like, I mean, Jack Warden. It was so many
Oh,
people.
yeah.
Such an incredible cast. And I do struggle, like I do love Peter Ustinov, but I do struggle because in my mind it's David Suchet is Poirot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, no shade on Branagh. Okay, I don't really love the new adaptations. The thing with Branagh is, I mean, we love Branagh and everything, but if he makes it, it's going to be the Branagh story, no matter who else is in it. And so I think it's a little hammy. And yeah, I think also they probably suffer by comparison because so many of us in the 80s and we grew up watching Suchet. Yeah.
I gotta say though that rewatching it, I was like, every scene that Angela Lansbury was in, I felt like she stole.
She does that a lot. Yes.
Oh, over the top. I loved it. It was ridiculous.
Yes. It was so funny because, again, like Murder, She Wrote was, right after 60 Minutes, you'd hear the tick, 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 and then you'd hear the music. And it was always kind of like, rhythmic and Sunday nights with Angela Lansbury. When I first started to watch movies with Angela Lansbury and realized, like, how they kept casting her as this, like, evil tart, which I think is how she described her part. Like, I was an evil tart. She just really always dove in and gave these performances, and oh my God, I loved her in this. Yeah.
I mean, just over the top. I
Yes.
absolutely.
Yeah, chewed the scenery, chewed the boat. I mean, the whole thing. Yes.
Flailing, it was amazing.
Yes. Oh, yeah, it's a really good one. Talk about another complicated mystery. This one actually it's more intricate, and I think it's because, that's what Agatha Christie did. But what I love again is the setup and
The set was
how
really.
clever it is. I mean, like, spoiler alert without a spoiler, really, but what we learn in the beginning fully pays off. And it's like, but there's so much misdirection and so many red herrings, and
Beautifully done. Yeah.
And
Really?
I mean, I think movie-wise, probably The Murder on the Orient Express is the better film in the 70s, but this is just a blast.
It's fun. And Bette Davis and Maggie Smith together, they were also just a hoot. Like,
I wish I could have heard all these stories that I'm sure it sounds like, reading about it, that Bette Davis kind of held court and he was really scared. The director, he was like, I've heard she's professional, but like intimidating. And how she would, I'm sure she was, but how she would just tell stories. But I kind of think maybe the benefit was her age, because I think Bette Davis in the 30s or 40s would be like, don't F with me. But by then, maybe she'd, kind of like, I'm enjoying myself. We're making a movie and telling stories. Yes.
oh man, I would have loved to just sit, fly on the wall. I would have loved it.
Yeah, it was kind of a chaotic shoot. For some reason, they forgot to like book a hotel for the cast. And so they kept having to like move these people room from room, like sometimes every day. So I can't imagine, like, that would have been stressful and annoying. And this was around the time too, I guess, David Niven's daughter had been in an auto accident, and she was really badly injured in Switzerland. So he would fly up every weekend to go sit with her and then come back and do this. And so there was a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, but they got it done. And this was an era where the company was trying to appeal to international audiences, and boy, you really did with this cast. You have people who would appeal from all corners of the world. I didn't realize this was the first movie Jane Birkin made, in like a first British movie in over a decade, because she'd been in France and doing other stuff. And yeah, I
Idea.
always just put her, well, I guess I do think of her in France kind of, but yeah.
This is the one. This also has a special spot in my heart because when I sold Mina House, is set in Egypt, the wonderful Lou Burney, who is an auto buy for me, he's one of the best crime writers.
Oh my God, such a good writer.
Such a good writer. The wonderful Lou Burney sent me a German poster of Death on the Nile.
Oh my God,
No,
that's incredible.
so I have it framed downstairs in my.
You do? Okay, take a picture later and send that to me. That's so cool.
Spoken.
It's like massive. Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I love foreign posters so much. Yeah, for Christmas, a friend sent me like a small Japanese poster of The Right Stuff, because I'm a big Sam Shepard person. And yeah, it was just so random to see, but just an amazing shot. Yeah. They're much more artistic, I think, than some of our posters, but that's so cool. Yeah, I think this era too, we had a lot of these 70s mystery. You know, we had like Murder by Death, which was a comedy. Of course, Murder on the Orient Express. Last of Sheila, have you seen that one?
No, I haven't.
You would love it so much. It was written by Anthony Perkins and Stephen Sondheim.
Really?
Yes, I guess they love to throw like game nights, and their game nights were really legendary. And so it is amazing. It was funny because it's one of those movies that I think a lot of people haven't heard of. And when I was in high school, my English teacher was married to Stephen Schwant, who wrote The Face on the Milk Carton and a couple like teenage mysteries. And he read my movie reviews in the school paper because I was like this weird kid writing about mammoth movies and stuff. And so he made a list of like puzzle or mystery things or noir that I should. And Last of Sheila was at the top. He said for plotting and like nothing is better than this movie. And it took me forever to track it down. And it's great. And then years later, Rian Johnson, who before he made Knives Out, he's married to a colleague of mine, Karina Longworth, and also I just kind of knew him on social media. I mentioned Last of Sheila, and he like dove into my DMs, and he said, "Yeah, I'm thinking of making like I love Last of Sheila, and I'm thinking of making a movie like that." And it wound up being Knives Out. Yeah, so you need to see this movie, and I can't wait to hear your thoughts. Yeah.
Keep blowing my mind. You know Karina Longworth? I
Yeah.
love her podcast.
I do too. She's been on a couple times for her. We did like Dean Martin, and yeah, she's amazing. Yes. So sweet. And just a genius, right? Like, I don't know. So much research goes into every one of those. Yeah. Yeah.
I love those. I love those deep dives.
Yeah. So I know you're gonna dig it. I mean, actually, Anthony Perkins and Stephen Sondheim were asked to write the script for Clue, and they turned it down. And I'm like, oh, but I mean, I love the script, but it's amazing when you think of who almost wrote it, like them and Tom Stoppard, who sent the check back because he's like, I can't figure it out. And it's just crazy. Yeah. So this was that era. And so Clue was actually, they were trying, Deborah Hill was trying to get it. Made the producer as early as like 80 or 81, but it took a few years because I think of the popularity of these movies.
Yeah,
Yeah.
okay. That makes
Yeah. So
that
this one really goes with the next ones too. Yeah.
just really segues. Everything segues nicely.
I know. Yeah. My new thought is maybe we all are pantsers. I don't know.
I think maybe we are.
Yes. Yeah, Clue was one of those movies I watched, you know, in the 80s. I think we saw it immediately as a new release. We didn't see it in the theater, but like I remember watching, renting the video over and over before we owned it, watching it on sleepovers, like making everybody on the block watch it. So do you remember when you were first exposed to it?
Same. I didn't get to see it in the theater.
No.
I also remember like renting it a couple times, and I again my that best friend who I've been friends with since we were six.
Oh, that's so amazing.
I saw it a bunch of times at her house,
Okay.
and so yeah, that was my and like you, I loved that board game. I played it a lot as a kid.
Yeah. Now, did you have a regular Clue or Master Detective? Because I had both, but yeah.
I only have the regular Clue.
Okay. Yeah, they've made so many versions of it. It's crazy because I like to every year for Toys for Tots, I like to buy a new Clue and donate that every year because I'm hoping there's more nerds like us basically that want to, you know, get into Clue. Yeah, but and you like me were a big Miss Scarlet fan.
I was always Miss Scarlet.
Yep. Yeah, had to be Miss Scarlet. And I think if like somebody made a fuss, I'd be Miss White. Because, you know, she was Madeline Kahn. How can you go wrong?
Okay, Madeline Kahn was a comedic genius. I love her.
Yes.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. Is it true? I'm hoping that you know this. Is it true that that whole scene with the flames on the side of my face was improv?
Improvise. And Tim Curry said, because they're like, how did you guys, did you burst out laughing? Yes. And then he said, and then we had to be scraped up off the floor. And he said it must have been like the hardest thing to edit
Oh,
because it's so perfect.
it pans around and the look on everybody's face, they're like,
What?
what?
What is this woman doing? Yeah. I think it was Michael McKean said the greatest thing about Madeline Kahn, where he's like, the world moves a little too quickly for her, and she's always trying to catch up. And he said, and she knows this about herself and teases it, and we all love her for it. And so she's always just like a step behind, trying to catch up. And she imbued Miss White with that so much, like in the kitchen. Oh, I love it. Yeah.
So many good lines.
You
So
could just quote this whole, that's what the actor said happens is like wherever they go, people, even if it's not their line. Yeah. People just come up and start quoting the movie.
yeah.
Yeah.
I think that there are some 80s movies that don't hold up that well. But I think this one, I really believe this one holds up.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if part of it too is because it was set in the past, and also it was kind of like a throwback to like the Thin Man and His Girl Friday era. So it was a movie out of time, whereas some of the movies that were set in the 80s, now when you watch it and you see like Mrs. LaRusso and Karate Kid go, hey, it's the 80s, it just like immediately causes a little bit of a laugh. But yeah, I think this one is so good. For me, it got panned by critics and it bombed. And I think it might be because of those endings.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it just depended on, I don't know if it was like the day you saw it or the place you saw it, which ending you were going to see. I like it that they all play back to back to back like this now. And for me, though, first of all, I want to know what were critics thinking? Come on. But Tim Curry, that last act of the movie, like, if I was a voter, that's going on my Academy Award ballot because it's like up there with Marissa Tomei and My Cousin Vinny, like that much energy and dialogue. And that's also Jonathan Lynn, the writer director. So he just was good with this dialogue. Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, like the incredible amount. He's like, he's running back,
Yes, like full running.
full running,
Yes.
like spitting dialogue
Yes.
so fast, and it's so funny.
Yeah, I know. And just having to, again, like you were saying with Angela Lansbury, where the arms are going and,
Yeah.
you know, and I had to stop her from screaming. And he's starting to play everybody else's parts, which is so good. Yeah, I don't know. I love this movie.
Game. And then he's like throwing Michael McKean around for a while. He's like, stop doing that. And he's like, no, so
Yeah. Oh my God. And you had a letter and you, first of all, they're all tongue twisters too. Like you said, spinning dialogue, but a lot of these are repetition and kind of like the Coen brothers love to use repetition, but to make it funnier. And oh my God.
it's effective. It's very effective.
It's hard to imagine anybody else playing Wadsworth. I mean, they were hoping for like John Cleese and they were hoping for Rowan Atkinson, but in America, they're like, we don't know who that is. And both of them would have been great, but it's like, you got Tim Curry, and now it's impossible to imagine anyone but Tim Curry. Just like Leslie Ann Warren was originally cast as Miss White. And yeah, Carrie Fisher was going to be Scarlett. She would have been great, but she was going to rehab around the time. And then they said, would you like to play Miss Scarlett? And she thought she was better suited to that role. Like the most beautiful. I also love that, of course, they're not wearing their colors because that's not their real names. And you know, the most beautiful green dress. Yeah. The
Yeah.
costumes in this.
Costumes are gorgeous. I did really like the little nod that, and I'm not sure anybody else had it, but when Mrs. White takes off her black jacket
Yes, with the white.
the inside and then it like disappears and you're like, 'cause she's Mrs. White.
I know, that's so good. Yeah. And Peacock kind of has some like feather action going.
Oh,
Eileen Brennan, so
Ellie,
funny.
so funny.
Yes. Oh, I love the scene at dinner
Oh, yeah.
where she can't let a silence go.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a nervous talker, so I would be, yeah. I don't know if I'd be doing that though, but yeah.
Pressure of speech.
Yes. And the double entendres. Oh, like when we were kids, we watched this movie and probably missed like,
Oh, I'm
well,
sure.
first of all, you're getting so many, you're probably doing probably two pages of dialogue like in a minute as opposed to a minute a page. So we probably missed jokes anyway, but we definitely missed those. And then when you're older, you're like, oh, okay, now I get what they're talking about. Yeah.
I also there's also just some like the honestly the whole opening sequence where he has stepped in dog poop
Yeah.
and everyone comes in and sniffs as because they smell it and they think it's on their own shoes.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
It really is. Yeah.
That's all I got about that. It's just funny.
It is. I think, I don't know if I could choose a favorite line. I think one that I say too much is, this is war, Peacock. You know, that whole thing. I love it so much. Martin Wolf, because he's so forceful. Yeah, all of these people working together, and they were talking about how they all have different styles of working and different personalities. Like everyone is like, Christopher Lloyd is just odd. I mean, they love him, but he's odd. And then, Madeline Kahn is kind of in her own universe, and some of these people were really studied, and Michael McKean's actually pretty straight-laced, and just different backgrounds, but for whatever, like they completely meshed. Colleen Camp is so good as Yvette, and I always forget when I watch that. I'm like, oh my God, she was the mom in Valley Girl. Like I forget that every time.
Dude, I forgot about that too.
Yes, every time I'm like, oh my God, that was who Yvette was. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Mean.
Such a good one.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite movies. That's
Yeah.
why I have a tattoo of it.
What do you say?
That's why I have such a large tattoo of it.
Yeah, of course. Other movies that I know we were talking about didn't really fit in with this, but another ensemble movie we both love, LA Confidential. Were there any others that you can think of that you like to watch a lot, or are you one of those people who, when you work, you kind of like to watch things that are in the vein or set in the era, or do you try to close yourself off so you don't?
That's a great question. I should watch more stuff set in the, you know, I do will set watch stuff that is set where I'm trying to set stuff.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
When I was writing the Istanbul book, there's a TV show that, and it was foreign, and it's called like, is it Midnight at the Pera Palace?
Okay.
It was set in the same time period, and it was set in.
Oh, that's helpful.
Awesome. These people
Yeah.
have some research for me.
Yeah,
Watched quite a bit of that, so I will go and do that kind of. It's not always useful because there's not always like something that corresponds.
yeah.
Like when I did India, which I think was the book that just came out, really is hard to keep track sometimes.
Yeah, because you wrote them so long ago, you're working on other stuff, and then when they come out, you're like, oh yeah, what happened? I did this 18 months ago or whatever. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
People ask about characters, and I'm like, you probably know better than me.
Yeah, I hear that all the time when I listen to author interviews, and yeah, Megan Abbott said the same thing. Yeah. It's like, it's hard to keep them straight. I don't remember because I'm working on so many things ahead. Yeah.
And my brain really will dump it all to keep the
You
like.
would have to kind of to move on to the next thing. Yeah. I think Jen McKinley said the same thing, because she's such a prolific writer. She's like, my favorite thing, well, it's just what I just did, but then that immediately leaves the brain and you go to the next one. Because otherwise, how could you? Yeah.
Get a dump.
And how hard is it when you get like revisions for something and you're working on something else to like balance that?
Oh, we'll find out. It's going to happen tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Oh no. Let's knock on wood or something. Yes. It'll go great. Yes.
Going to be great. It's
Yes.
great.
Yes. No, I think it will be. How do you handle research? Do you do all of that before, or are you writing and just kind of you leave sections, like my friend Jordan Harper will put like write good shit here or make better or something just to keep going.
I try to do some research up front. Like I'll read a book or two. The one I'm working on now is Vengeance in Venice. And before I started writing, I read this book called The Unfinished Palazzo. And it's and like I got so much inspiration. I had no idea. I was like, oh good, this is like just about a palazzo in Venice, and it's like whatever. I'll learn some things. And the first woman that rented that palazzo, and like it was this woman, and then there was someone else that rented it, and then the third woman was Peggy Guggenheim.
She's everywhere.
And it's now a Guggenheim Museum, but the first woman that rented it was Luisa Casati, and she was this Italian heiress and was crazy eccentric. Like she would walk her, she, wearing very little, would walk her cheetah in St. Mark's Square at night. And
As
I,
one does.
as it does, so I will be taking all of that and making that a character.
You have to. How do you read that and not go, I want the nearly naked lady walking her cheetah at night?
Like that sold immediately. So sometimes that happens where I like will read, I'll read about the place and I'll get inspiration for characters or for things. And I try not to do too much. I just want to get an idea. And it often, like that kind of reading also will often give me like side characters, like really of the place. And then I'll write my draft and I'll do like Jordan Harper and I'll just put describe. Take this at
And
here.
then keep going
And then just keep going.
for momentum. You kind of have to.
And then I always set it aside for a month or two. Come back to
That's smart. So you're, you know, like if you edit something too many times in a row, you need a break.
see it. It also makes me a lot less precious about it.
Oh, that's true. Because you just,
Yeah.
and you're like, I worked so hard on that.
If you give it a couple months and come back, you're like, man, that's fine. You can cut that and cut that. That's fine. You're a lot less precious about what you wrote.
So you said you've been writing kind of like 2 a year. So some of these books that you're finishing, you're just like, ah, I don't like this one as much. Or are you thinking of saving it for later or the time is right? Or.
So, like I'm thinking of
I'm
when.
still fascinated by, you know, these in the drawer and the Ocean's 11 heist, basically. No, I'm just kidding. Got to read all these.
We're not, let's never rule out a heist book.
That would be amazing. You know, oh, what if Jane is somehow involved? You never know.
I mean, I'm contracted
She's
through.
in, yeah, she's in Monte Carlo or something, or Monaco.
Yeah. I forgot what the question was. I got real excited about a heist.
I did too. Oh, the books that you wrote and set aside, are you going to revisit those, or
So,
did you just think these aren't ready yet, or
I think that there's an element of they're not ready yet. Like one's a World War II book.
okay.
The market's not great for those.
Yeah.
So, someday maybe I'll go back to that. Actually, I mean, I really liked it. I will probably someday go back to that. I have like a romance novel in the drawer. Someday I'll
Okay.
probably go back to that. And then I was working on, before I had to drop everything and get to work on the things that I'm contracted for, I was working on a haunted house book. So I would love to go back to that too.
That would be good. Yeah. I think that would also keep you fresh, like to play with other genres.
It's fun. And like, I mean, there's so many stories I want to tell. So it's fun to always be working on something that's a little bit different.
Do you still like to kick around ideas with your best friend beforehand? Or, yeah, that's great.
And like with other writers too, really good pals that are also mystery writers, Shannon Baker and Jesse Lowry. And like we do write a lot of writing retreats together, and I definitely spend a lot of time kicking around ideas with those ladies.
Oh, that's so good. Are they your first readers, or is your partner your first reader?
No, he is my last reader. He doesn't.
Ah,
The book is out. I don't really have any beta readers. I usually just send it to my editor. I was working for a long time with a freelance editor, and she has gotten real busy. She had to get a day job, and so yeah, just gonna be sending these to my editor. You know what? My agent is really good at editorial, though.
Oh, that's so nice. It's good when
So
you have that skill built in. Yeah.
so I'm gonna take that all back and say that my agent is my first reader.
All right. There you go. Yeah. Well, I'm excited. Definitely congrats on the latest book. I'm very excited about the Venice title. That sounds right up my alley. So I'm like a drop in the bucket amount of Italian. But of course, if you ask, I'm like, oh, I'm Italian. That's my first. I think everybody does that who's Italian. The joke is like nobody likes to say they're Italian more than, or nobody likes to say where they're from more than Italians. Or people from the Midwest will lovely always say like, we're from the Midwest. Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I
Same
do
thing.
also. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this was so much fun, Erica. You'll have to come back for another topic anytime, more movies and books to talk about.
Too.
Yeah.
Keep this going.
Yeah. Thank you so much for doing this. Yes.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research, equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as $1 per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more, by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching.
This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.